We've really helped and contributed to a lot of positive outcomes for customers who are victims of cyber attacks, need to recover from cyber attack, just looking for a place where they can walk into the UBX house and open the door and they're like, I'm safe.
Hello and welcome to episode 80 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're exploring the journey of a cloud service provider innovator that transformed a childhood fascination with computers into a mission-driven venture. This tale begins in a Detroit basement loaded with servers and evolves into a global entity leveraging cloud technology for operational excellence for their customers. That company is UBX Cloud. Joining me is Stephen Panofsky, president and co-founder of UBX Cloud. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Anthony. I really appreciate being here. It's quite an honor, actually.
Thanks very much. And before we get into it, I love what we're going to talk about. We were in the pre-show, and I'm really excited about your story, talking about UBX Cloud, but also just talking about some really important trends in the industry at this point in service provider land. So before that, though, if you like great things with great tech and would like to feature in future episodes, you can click on the link on the show notes or go to gtwgt.com. Head there and view all the episodes, or you can go to YouTube, hit the link and subscribe button, the like and subscribe button even, or go to the podcast platform of your choice, Apple, Google, Spotify, all hosted and distributed by Spotify Podcasts. All right, Stephen, with that, let's get into it. And again, like I mentioned to you in the pre-show, I'm excited to get back to the roots of the show, which is service providers. It's been a while since I've had a service provider on the show. This is why the show exists. Service providers doing great things with great technology. It's what I love talking about, right? So before we get into UBX Cloud, though, give me and give the listeners a little bit of a background on yourself and how, you know, you're self-confessed geek. I think it's pretty obvious to sort of see. I love that because, you know, so am I, and it's great in a space. But give us a little bit of background about yourself and how you became to start UBX Cloud with a friend of yours, I believe.
Yeah, that's correct. The history is quite interesting. I always seem to fall into things, right? So in 1996, I myself and a childhood friend just kind of developed a love affair with all of technology as much as we could get. On Packard Bells, actually. This is one of the Packard Bells that we first
started. Oh, look at that. That's awesome.
Journey with, yeah. We just loved everything about it. I mean, we couldn't get enough of it. We would meet up on weekends at church, and every time we would have a new story or a new thing that we read and we wanted to share with. And that cemented the friendship between me and Igor. We were childhood friends. We're both Macedonians, first generation, growing up in the States. And this is like all new frontier stuff. Like we were wanting to learn as much as possible. Internet wasn't really a thing. BBSs, bulletin board systems, were mm-hmm. probably the gateway to the internet for us. You know, it was like what started it all. And with me and Igor, it was Packard Bell and learning as much as we could. And we wanted to learn about Microsoft products. You know, Linux was like pretty new. We wanted to learn about Linux, so we started, building out a home lab, and we had systems and hardware that was donated by some of our friends and their parents who were working at like General Motors, EDS.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And we had, we were like, yeah, give us all of it, you know, and like, we will learn from it. And, he and I, our minds are just very different, but we both put that together and just made something awesome with it. I remember, interestingly enough, I actually come from a restaurant family. So my family is almost three generations in the restaurant business.
Okay.
They brought a lot of the specialty cooking and the recipes from Macedonia, which is very similar to Polish food.
I'm a big fan of that type of cuisine for sure, without question. Okay. Yeah.
So we brought that, my grandfather brought that in, and they've had a successful restaurant business in the greater Detroit area and multiple locations and everything. And I worked the family business, but I was like, when I came home to that Packard Bell, or when I looked at that thing and I walked into a data center, I'm like, this is what I want to do. there was a customer at the restaurant that was like, hey, he's like, you like computers? And I'm like, yeah. And he was a regular, and this was back in the day when you could smoke, and there was a line of smokers in the front, and they're all smoking and drinking their coffee. And he had like a trench coat. He worked for a local ISP, and he's like, you
Whoa.
like computers? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, come with me. He's like, I'm going to show you where all the computers are. And I'm looking at my mom. I'm like, can I go?
That's
Right?
pretty interesting. Like, I would have thought maybe, is this guy a little bit dodgy, like trench coat,
Yeah, you know.
asking a kid or like to go with him?
Exactly. I thought about that too. I like in retrospect, I was like, you like let me go with like some random stranger, and she's like, ah, he was a regular, he's fine.
He knew.
And yeah, and he drove me to the data center. It was the facility was called BigNet. It was a local dial-up ISP, and he brought me in, and there was like a it was like a retail counter in the front, and then there was a safe. And then they opened the safe, the vault doors, and in the vault doors were cabinets with beige servers.
I was
And
going to say, is it like the because that time it would have been potentially the ISP side potentially was going to be rows of literal modems connected up together potentially as well. Like that's what you would dial up into, right?
yep, they were US Robotics, exactly
Yeah,
what
there
you
you
just
go.
mentioned. Yep. And I was like scanning the room, and the excitement never left me after that day. After that smell of the glycol in the air and seeing that data center, I was like, I want to do this forever.
It's interesting you talk about that feeling, and I've just been transported back to around about the same time, 95, 96, when my mate took me to one of the first internet service providers here in Australia, in Perth, called PSINet. Never forget the name. And we went in there, and I just remember the smell, the tech they had. Like, it was just a different world. And they had this thing called Ethernet that was a really fast internet connection. And I was like, well, this is amazing, So I think you and I probably had that same feel of that, and I've just got transported back in time, and it was a great feeling that kind of, I know solidified my love of technology as well and the internet because it was so new and fresh back then.
Very much so. That's wonderful. And that's exactly how I felt. And I turned down a lucrative restaurant empire, right? Like sons inherit, like that's kind of the thing in our culture. So it's like, I'm okay. I'm gonna do this because I really like doing this all the time. And that was in the 90s, right?
So talk about how that evolved. Like, obviously, and we've got the garage story happening here, but you've got your origin story of the love of computer with Igor and what you guys are doing. But how has that translated to setting up something that's going to become UBX Cloud in the future? What was the transition and the steps there?
Oh yeah, good point. So I worked for back in the 90s, internet was not that common, right? It was more perceived as like almost like a luxury at that point and not accessible. So I worked at a coffee shop just north of my home, and they was a it was a cyber cafe. So people
You were
were
gonna say, I was gonna say, you were gonna say internet cafe. Yep, awesome.
So it was like the two things that I love, internet, technology, coffee,
Coffee.
right?
Love it.
So it was the greatest thing ever. We worked there, and my boss was, interestingly enough, like everyone on the staff's name was Steve. Like there was like five Steve there. So my boss Steve was like, hey, you're pretty good at Photoshop, and you're pretty good at like HTML and stuff. He's like, why don't you teach our web design class on Fridays? And I was like, okay, like totally, I can do that. So I would teach design fundamentals and just basic HTML for constructing like personal websites and stuff. And this was around the time of like this was actually even before like GeoCities and like Tripod and some of those other sites. And he had a really like there was a lot of interested people. And at the end of our sessions, like we did a couple, I think there were a few weeks long on the week on Fridays. People would be like, hey, okay, I finished my website. We give them like the floppy disk or whatever with the HTML stuff on it. And like, okay, like, where do I put this? Right? Like, where does it
I can see where
go?
this is going. I can see where this is going.
Yeah. So I actually asked my boss, I said, look, there's a lot of people asking, why don't you guys like put this on your servers and stuff? Because they're an ISP. Like the Cyber Cafe actually was the local ISP there.
Wow, there you go. Okay.
And that's how they were able to serve all those internet connections at their coffee shop. And he's like, you know what? He's like, we sell dial-up minutes. That's it, and coffee. Like he's like, we don't do any kind of anything. And I was like, well, do you mind? And he actually, I think he suggested, I think he said, well, don't you have those like servers at home? And I'm like, yeah, I do, you know? And he was totally cool with it. So we ended up just moving a lot of those customers naturally, right? And it got to the point over time where it was like, we got like, as these technologies are evolving, their needs were evolving. So like, hey, you know, we want email. Can you do email? You know, and we're like, hey, like, you know, we have Linux servers and we have Sun and we have Compaq back then. And I was like, yeah, we can do all of that. FTP, yeah, no problem. And it was just us learning, right? And then it kind of got to a point where like we're like looking at each other and we're like, this is like a business now. 'Cause we ended up having to like our servers were like my basement looked like something out of NORAD. I mean, it was like people would see my basement and they're like, what is this? Like,
That's
this is
so cool.
crazy.
Yeah. Do you still have pictures? Do you still have pictures of those, like hanging
You
around?
know, I'll get, no, I have very few pictures,
It's a
unfortunately, and it
shame,
was
right? Because it would have been cool. Like it's a cool thing to look back on and go, this is how it was versus what it
yeah,
is now.
apparently, you know, being the child of immigrant parents in the United States, cameras were like something that you just didn't do. They were just too expensive. Cameras and photos were expensive. I'm not even joking. Like, we've got like five pictures of like the entire 1990s,
Isn't that
right?
interesting?
So, yeah, so it was we had I mean, I remember like we couldn't afford the racks. Like Igor was like building racks out of like spare wood, right? Like
Wow.
he got
That's so
like
good.
donated or he went to Home Depot and like painting them black and stuff. So he like that's just how he worked, right? His mind was just incredible. And we got to a point where we're like, okay, we need to like co-locate this. So one of the things that I was doing is that at the restaurant locations, they had industrial power. They had three phase. So I co-located some of our servers at my family's restaurants. They had good connectivity, battery backup, you know, three-phase power. It was a nice little setup. And then I'm like, you know, Igor was like, we need to put this in a co-location or we need to put this in a data center, like a proper data center. And that's kind of where it started. Like that was the spark. And
Awesome.
our clients just kind of drove that, like they pushed us and they showed us what they needed. And then we're like, yeah, we can do that, right? Or like, yeah, we want to do that.
I
So,
love the story. I love the evolution of just kind of being there, geeking out, but also then through just being around people that needed certain services and through the web design, it kind of evolved into, you know, we're going to build and host out of our garage. And then it's like, well, garage, this is getting serious. Let's pull it out and put it into a data center. And then, from a UBX point of view, that kind of was incorporated, what, around 2008 timeframe. So, you know, what was the sort of shift that made you go, hey, now we've got to, you know, create UBX and kind of make this thing legit?
Yeah, like our goal was to like we both went to college together. We both graduated from the same university, and you know, our paths were like very different. Like I was doing a lot of like consulting for smaller businesses and working with a lot of local managed service providers, and I was like the server backup guy or like the server dude or you know the rotating the tape kind of person, right? And handling that aspect of it, and Igor was just like you know. Just rocketing into space with his virtualization specialization and knowledge. So, but we both had that fundamental core and drive for like servers. Like everything that we did in the data center was exciting and fun, and we wanted to do more of that. And you know, in 2008 was like that year where it was like, okay, we're doing this. Like sign here, right? Like this is now a thing. Like it wasn't a thing. It wasn't a real thing before. Now it's a thing. So. And like I said, we'd already learned like we'd already known of like Citrix technologies and you know I think it was a Metaframe back then and RDS over dial-up and you know we were like we really like enjoyed doing those kinds of things and we knew that we didn't want to really be like an outsourced IT department. We wanted to be like the back end people, right? Like you know the radio face, you know, not the Tom Cruise, right?
Oh,
So.
that's it. And so what, when you started there, or just taking through the first few years of UBX 2008 through maybe the first 5 or so years, what sort of technology stack and partners were you using back then? You mentioned, you know, VMware or virtualization, so I'm assuming VMware. But in terms of your stack, and I haven't asked this question for a while because I haven't needed to because of the different types of providers, but I used to ask in the early days of the show, like, what did you build on? Like, was it Dell? Was it HP? And I was kind of interested in the stack that it was because they were all kind of, people were doing it all kind of the same, but it was slightly different, you know? And you've mentioned that you would look at other service providers to get a bit of influence or a bit of ideation, and we all kind of did that, right? So what was that stack initially, and what were you actually offering as services in those early days?
Sure. So we were very comfortable from the beginnings with HP and Compaq. I mean, Compaq servers were basically what we started all the x86 stuff on, and that just kind of evolved, like, to the point where we were on, like, first name basis with a lot of the HP people. I had a key fob, or not a key fob. I had some access to get a key code to get into their depot to just grab parts and leave IOUs,
How
right?
good's
Like,
that?
it was awesome, right?
How different it was. How different it was.
How different. I mean, I'm not even joking. I would leave, like, a yellow, like, post-it note and be like, UBXOs, you know, like this, and this, like, send me the bill or whatever. And it was really great. And but we got to a point where, we needed to, like, do more automation. We needed to kind of evolve that stack. Like, in order to complete the vision that we had set out, was like, okay, we need to not necessarily use what we like, but use what's the best for what we need. And we decided, I think it was like 2011, that, even though I have a love affair with HP, that we really needed to go with Cisco UCS, and we needed to do these things to automate the deployments for our desktop as a service.
Yeah, I get you.
And back then it was, like, really novel and new. And, like, in 2008, like, nobody, like, we were, like, the niche, right? Like, we were offering Citrix desktops to a market that had absolutely no interest in Citrix desktops, right? So the kind of customers that we got were, like, very unique. Like, hey, I've got a multi-site construction company. I got people connecting in. I don't want people to drive in and make, like, deposit their data and, like, do prints and stuff. So I got we were, like, in that space with, like, those kinds of requirements. And we also had a lot of questions. Like, people were just like, look, my cabinets are filling up with servers and I have no place of managing them, or I don't have enough power or
Perfect.
heat to contain them. So that was basically the building blocks and the core fundamentals of what we did. And on the stack side, we never compromised on storage. Like, that was a thing. We even early on, we were EMC partners. We spent a ton of money with EMC, and uptime was awesome, but the workload, the arrays were just not designed for recomposing desktops and the kind of, we were
Yeah. What were
huge.
you running? Were you running VNXs or something a little bit
Yeah.
more? Yeah. So we were VNXs as well. So and I went, they ran beautifully when they ran beautifully, but when they fell hard. You know, they were
Very,
really
very much so.
very hard, right? They were either you got everything or you got nothing. Yeah, a lot of good times, a lot of pain with them. But yeah, I know what you're talking. I knew exactly where you were heading at with that sort of line of thought there. So
We needed it.
what did you guys do to kind of get over that?
So we ended up settling on a technology that didn't really have, there wasn't actually a formal stack. It's called FlashStack now, but that's actually what we had done back then. So a couple things. We became an ISP, like, legitimate ISP, and that was, like, at the time I felt like it was a little overkill. Like, why are we doing this, right? But I understood later on that it was really important to maintain that supplier quality. So it was like, we became an ISP. We manage our own global ASN, and we manage our own upstream peers, because we can't rely on other people to give us crappy transit, right? Like, that was really it. It's our product, right? Like, we can't compromise on that. So we became an ISP, but we, I like to say, like, we're not, like, a traditional ISP. Like, we're not evil, right? Because I feel like in our profession, like, telco and ISPs are, like, on this side of the fence, and, like, no one
Absolutely.
on that side of the fence.
Absolutely. They're network guys. Yeah, let's just leave it at that
Yeah.
without insulting them too much.
Yeah, it's a, it, I mean, no, I mean, I think that just the industry is just very different. Like,
Yeah, that's it as well.
yeah, they're like, they're like dog eat dog. Like, they're just not
Yes.
our kind of people.
No.
So it was like, okay, we need to control the supply chain, and we did that. And on the storage side, we were actually the first company to buy Pure Storage. We were like, take our money, right? Like, hey,
Yeah.
I went through all the couches and I got, like, this huge amount of money, and we're gonna buy all flash. And
That's cool.
we were their first customer. We were their first customer in Michigan. They, quote unquote, popped their cherry on UBX, which I thought
There
was
you
really
go.
cute.
Yeah, Not
And
that's very, very, that's very pure storage as well, by the way, to actually say something like that in the early days.
very, very, very much pure storage. But you know what? Those guys are amazing. I mean, like, really, it was like, look, we put all of our VDI workload and all of our mixed IO workload on there. And I'm like, dude, it just works. Like, this is like, we don't have to do anything. Like, it's doing its thing, right? And people were like calling us up and they're like, something's wrong. We're like, what do you mean? It's running too fast. These aging reports that take like week, like 4 or 5 days are coming up in like in 1 day.
Yeah,
And
what
we're
have you
like,
done? What have you done?
we migrated you over to Pure. Like all of our existing customers, we made a decision, and I thought this was really cool of us. We're like, hey, we're not going to charge you for this. We're moving you to this storage,
That's
right?
cool.
And any new, net new customers, then obviously we would change the pricing structure a bit, but we gave the ones that were with us from the beginning like the benefit of that, and I like that. Like we were able to do that.
And
I was
Pure.
also.
Pure's been amazing, right? Like I actually pocked Pure as well in Australia, and it, just some things didn't quite work out, but I saw the brilliance of it, right? And what it offered. And if we could have, I think we would have, but we were just too far invested in other technologies and partnerships at the time, and just couldn't make it work. And when you look at where Pure's journey and where they are today, I mean, they're at the top of their game today, even more so than what they were, right? So it's like we're talking about a journey of now 10 plus years for them. But they're still stronger than ever, and I think it's because of the foundations of what they did. It was so different, but other people were trying to do what they did, but they just executed on it perfectly. And so, yeah, it was a good partnership for you to strike up with for sure.
Yeah, and like I said, it was like completely like it was a very natural kind of relationship, and they solved every single one of the storage challenges that we had literally overnight.
That's awesome.
And their vision, like with the on our end, it was like I felt like we were really visionary on a lot of the cloud services, and I think that we still are. But for them, it was like they were like 10 years ahead of everything, right? Like we were like 5 years ahead, they were 10 years ahead. So it was really awesome. And they've been really supportive of us. Like when we made our move into India, we were again their first customer in that market, so it was like we did a lot of the company that we keep is really meaningful and a part of our
I
corporate
want to quickly
ethos.
talk about that because I think that is, I mean, we're quickly running out of time, but I want to talk about India because then you're a global footprint, right? So what made you go to India? Apart from the obvious, it's a growing region, expanding, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I saw. I worked very closely with one, a brilliant systems engineer at the time, Muhammad Ali, and I developed a 10-year relationship with this guy. And he was from South India, and I never met a mind like his before. And I was just like working with him was just like a waltz, right? Like just a beautiful dance.
Interesting.
And he saw like. He handled a lot of he did a lot of work on storage systems, and he did a lot of work on backup systems, and he was just a fantastic Microsoft architect. And he worked for us for a long time, and I said, hey, I really see a lot of opportunity in India, but I would never like I'm not comfortable with really opening up a business or expanding into that area just because I'm President Gringo. I'm like, I'm sitting here in Detroit. I've got no idea what's going on over there, right? Like, and I have no idea if like I just see the market potential, like I see the need, and I go if I I go if we expand our business into that area, like would you be willing to run it? And he was like, absolutely. And
Wow,
I was so
okay.
surprised because I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
And within a very short period of time, he went from contractor to employee and now owner. I mean, it was like such a
Wow.
success story for this guy. And a lot of our journey into India was really just exactly the same kind of stuff that we did and innovated on the US side,
That's awesome.
desktop as a service, pivoted into backup as a service, and flash that cloud became a thing, right? And we were the pioneers there. And Veeam service provider, like, we are the backend people that support enterprise IT. Like if you are an IT manager and you're looking at, to trying to find a pathway to the cloud or to journey into the cloud or to put the proper workload in the right location and secure it, right? Like we're that company. Like we cement ourselves because of our level of domain specialty, and we fit very nicely in that kind of arrangement. For enterprise IT, they leverage us for our expertise in our cloud and our cloud knowledge, and we're very good at those things. And on the service provider side, the managed service provider side, provide products for them to sell and to incorporate into their stack as well. So FlashStack has been wonderful for us, and you know, we are all excellent at the very specific discipline and area that we do at UBX Cloud, and that is brought into the India market, and that expertise comes with it. And when we got there, it was like, you guys got to throw out all this bad legacy, like Juju stuff you got going on here. Like, all this is not going to help you when you're ransomware, when you're hacked. You know, like, have you tested a backup? You know, your server's like 100 years old. You know, like, having these conversations. And now, like, we've been 5 years in that market, I think on the sixth now, and it's the same. Like I said, it's the exact same as the U.S. market was early on.
That's
So.
awesome. Let's actually carry on with that, because let's talk about the evolution of, you've mentioned Veeam as a partner. Thank you very much for that, obviously. But building a service on there and putting a lot of effort into that backup as a service tech and what that means and what it means to customers, but also how that's evolved into cyber and a generalized holistic approach to solving a problem today, which is increased, cyber attacks, malware, crypto, ransomware, whatever it might be. So how I know you've got some very specific thoughts around the evolution there. So spend a couple of minutes talking about that and how UBX have had to become experts in this field to help customers and what with the technology stack that you've got as well.
That's a really good point. I mean, we being a, you know, we're not a public cloud provider. We're not providing you just utility, right? We're providing you our FlashStack and our experts, right? So that's kind of the differentiator there. And back in 2016, you know, we were handling a lot of our Veeam customers, their backups, their backup and their DR, and a lot of the business continuity components of the Veeam service provider environment, which we managed. And you know, two of our largest customers, or our largest MSPs, got hit by the Kaseya ransomware attack. You know, they weaponized the Kaseya. They used the RMM tool for the first time. Like, this was the first time that this has happened.
I remember that one.
Yeah, and I'm like on Reddit, like, oh my God, like, has anyone seen this? We've got like thousands of clients with thousands of servers being encrypted, and like, it's all happening all at the same time. Like, how is this even possible? Like, all over the planet. And this was a success story for us and for Veeam, because 80% of those impacted servers that were encrypted, physical, virtual, whatever, they were using our UBX's Cloud Connect. You know, they were using our environment, and we restored them into full operation in like no time. And we were amazed at how fast everything was. We were doing cloud restores faster than the MSP could do local restores, and that like blew my mind, and that blew all of our minds. And those were like probably the hardest few weeks, just, you know, helping that customer and helping them come out of it. I was, you know, I'm on site, I'm taking calls on behalf of the MSP, and I'm assuring their customers that everything's going to be okay, right? Like, everything's fine. Like, you know, we're good.
Pretty
And
serious situation, but coming out on the right side of it because of the tech stack and the processes and the architecture that you guys have put into place as well.
yeah, and you never anticipate a scenario in which all of your customers are calling you at the same
Yeah,
time,
that's
right?
worst case, right? That's like, yeah,
That's worst case.
I would have packed my bags, Fiji, there you go, done.
And that's the thing though too, is that we were so specialized, and we knew, like, Veeam is the tool in our toolbox that never let us down. I mean, honestly, that's it. It's like the Swiss Army knife that when you like wave it over the box and say, okay, what is this server? What is this backup? It's going to show you the tools that you need to recover it, right? It's not just going to leave you another box that you've got to unpack and put it away. So that Swiss Army knife and that technology is what helped us recover all these environments. And we have so many stories like this. It's actually like, I probably forgot more that we recovered, you know, than I can remember at this point. But that was a big one. And we have a history of using Veeam for like a lot of off-shelf uses for like emergency migrations, ransomware attacks, and the customer needs to get the environment out of there, right? Or recover the environment. And and it's always been that, like, that trusty tool. And the thought, the engineering, you know, the evolution of the product, and it's just been hand in hand. It's incredible, and it's
It's
been such a
funny,
part.
yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I was
No,
saying
you're fine.
just saying, it's funny that I kind of don't probably appreciate that as much as I used to, being on this side of the fence. Like when I was on the other side of the fence, I remember, being amazed, like, oh, thank God we've got. I remember, being cryptoed a couple of times, or Casa being cryptoed a couple of times, and they've got a 4 terabyte VM, but we're doing an instant recovery of the machine, getting it up and running, and at least they've got their servers back up and running because of the technology. And I used to appreciate a lot more, I think, than what I do now, because I'm not, it's not impacting me in the same way that it used to. Though I love hearing the stories about that. And it almost makes me slightly wish, not really, but slightly wishes that maybe I get back into that side of the game and get that feeling that I had of just knowing that we're going to be okay. Because we've architected, and not just from a, I'm not just talking about, talking about the Veeam point of view, but I'm talking about architecting everything and knowing that we've got the Cisco UCS, the Pure Storage, the Flash, the networking's in play. Everything that we've built and architected gets us to the point where we can go to a customer and say, we can recover you with confidence, and hey, don't worry. Like that's what you want. And as a when you're offering a service and building a business around this is what you want to have confidence in. So yeah, I just thought I'd mention that. It's really interesting and great to hear it as well.
Absolutely. And when you mentioned like the flash stack, the resiliency with that part of the stack as well, like the backup is one thing, but the production environment is another. Pure storage was, we have the data immutability feature on snapshots. Like, good luck deleting the snapshots, right? There's all these hooks and technologies on the storage end that are completely independent of the backup side, but still serve the purpose of that. Let's make sure that things don't get destroyed.
The whole
And
approach.
yeah, the entire holistic approach. And on the Veeam side, leveraging all that goodness, and you're right, like the Wild West aspect of it. Like I remember we called Veeam support up, and those crazy Russians on the other end back then were like, hey, I'm like, hey, can we restore a 250 terabyte physical machine into VMware Cloud over the wire? And the guy's like, let me check, hold on. And he comes back and he's like, you try to restore and you let us know. I'm not even joking. Like that, I was like, okay, we'll try it. Because well, like that, I was that we were validating if we could. And you want to know what? We did it.
No, that's
We did a
awesome.
P2V, physical to virtual conversion over the wire during a storage fabric failure. On the client end, so their entire storage fabric was just falling apart. The company, it's that this is another long story, but the company went out of business and they told their customers to leave, and they had 150,000 servers. So we were evacuating all this customer's environment, these poor clients that were just stuck there, and we did that. That was like the biggest VM we ever P2V'd in my.
That's a massive VM as well, just quietly.
Yeah, I have the screenshot. I've got to find the screenshot because I was like,
Oh
who did
yeah, that's one of those cool things, right?
it?
Hey, just to finish off, speaking of VMware and speaking of VMs, just want to quickly, like in 5 minutes, just like chat about the VMware scenario with Broadcom and how that's impacting you from the point of view of obviously I believe you play a couple of sides of the fence with regards to what you offer in terms of VMware licensing and then your own licensing. So, in a very quick nutshell, what is it meaning to you? Has it impacted, and what's the reality for customers moving forward?
I think that it's definitely a strange situation for a lot of people out there, and just kind of like, okay, like this is a product that we've used since I was like, like 15 years old, right? Like it's like, so it's like very near and dear to us. And because of the ownership change and because of the changes in the atmosphere, I still feel that that there's still a lot there, especially on the enterprise side with VMware. And even though UBX Cloud, it's funny. I mentioned like we're like a mullet, right? Like party in the back and the business in the front. But like we do a lot of our labbing on OpenStack, and we have OpenStack experts on staff, and we could very easily create an enormous OpenStack cloud. But really, it's like, well, who are our customers? Well, our customers are a large enterprise, right? And our customers are like, look, this technology, single pane, it works awesome. There's no reason to leave it, right? Just because there's a little bump in the road here and there. Overall, I think it'll just kind of even itself out. And from our side of the fence, it's like, okay, well, they're saying, well, everyone's gonna, they're all gonna rush to the public cloud. I'm like, hey, we're here, right?
Yep.
We've got a VMware private cloud and it's FlashStack and it's awesome and it's managed by experts. And hey, guess what? We're like a lot cheaper and we care, right? So it's like, so there's the value proposition there. And, you know, I mean, yeah, we could deliver an OpenStack cloud that would do a lot of amazing things, but, you know, there's no reason to change, especially when you have larger enterprise clients that are not willing to make that shift. So let Broadcom get comfortable in their new position and, you know, let them kind of assess the situation. And I think it'll be okay.
Do you think that customers and tenants of VMware cloud service providers have potentially been paying for a super premium, super reliable product on the cheap a little bit maybe for the last 10 years? I've been trying to quantify this in my head. You know, maybe there's a bit of a normalization of what you're actually getting from the point of view of the product. And now there's a real tangible example to play it against, which is the public cloud, because repatriation is a thing and was a thing and still is a thing, because primarily I think of cost pressures, right? So it's super expensive compared to what the private cloud was or the infrastructure cloud was. So could we just be normalizing that to a certain extent, like you mentioned, not completely going the way of the public cloud cost or the hyperscaler cost, and kind of landing somewhere in the middle, and enterprises understanding and tenants understanding that it's actually okay. Like I'm comfortable here, because the alternative is probably something that, yeah, cheaper, whatever, but maybe less reliable, less tangible for my business to be a going concern. Because if something goes wrong, do I really want to trust that technology? And I'm not slagging the other technology that's out there completely, because I've had some on the show the last couple of episodes, right? But I think, do you see that as being a potential outcome here, that there's a bit of normalization of the cost here?
I think the come to Jesus and the reality check is really important there when it comes to that. And I think you nailed it. You know, we've all been using this technology and it's so excellent and so good, but there's so much legacy pricing models. You know, VMware was very much like, it's okay, you know, but in reality, Broadcom is kind of injecting that, like, hey, there's a reason why everyone is using this. You want uptime, you know, you want resiliency, stick with this. And you're okay to pay for it because, you know, you want that 100% uptime, or that high uptime. And I think that, like, you know, you mentioned, you know, the other options that are out there, they're all fine. I mean, really it is, but you got to look at it from the lens of the customer, you know, and what's important to them. And, you know, is like VDI is a huge thing for us. So it's like, look, we're invested in desktop as a service and, you know, using those products and using those hypervisors, there's a reason why we're using them. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, good stuff. Hey, finally, just in a minute or so, what's next for UBX? What's the next things that you're looking at to sort of innovate on and sort of, you know, bring to market?
You know, like I said, we begrudgingly got into cyber in 2016, but you know, we've really helped and contributed to a lot of positive outcomes for customers who are victims of cyber attacks, need to recover from cyber attacks, and just looking for a place where they can, you know, they can walk into the UBX house and open the door and they're like, I'm safe, right? We have Veeam, we have Pure Storage, we have experts, like come in, like we'll take care of you. Here's hot cocoa, right? And cookies.
And cookies, good.
Any cookie? Oh yeah, cookies are a big thing. If you go
Yeah,
on YouTube, search for UBX cookies, you'll see it. You'll see
Oh,
my
okay.
list.
I'm gonna do that now. I'll link to it.
And that's her back there, actually. That's our baker extraordinaire.
There
So
you
she bakes.
go.
And it's just it's very much the you know, having the best in class engineers and kind of very much doing what we do well. And expanding, you know, expanding our cloud offerings. We've got a lot of, you know, exciting news in 2024 regarding our, you know, expansion into India even more and cementing that investment. And then also into new areas like, you know, the UAE, like the Gulf
Oh,
region.
wow.
Like
Okay. Yeah, cool.
we see that cybersecurity, business continuity, and private cloud are like, you know, they're really in hot demand there and the experts to run it. So
Beautiful.
I'm excited. I mean, I get that same like glycol data center feeling that I get now. I'm actually like,
I love
oh,
that tie
I'm
back.
in
I
the
love
field
the tie
again.
back. Good, good. Great way to end. Hey, this has been a really great conversation. And like I say a few times, but I mean it here, we could have talked for hours. So thanks a lot. Steve, for being on. Just as a final reminder, if you like great things with great tech, head to the YouTube channel, head to the website, gtwgt.com or at gtwgtpodcast. This has been episode 80 of Great Things with Great Tech. Thanks again to UBX Cloud for being on.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Appreciate it.